All right. Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sing Second Podcast. I am John Schofield from the Naval Academy Alumni Association and Foundation. Joining me is my co-host and producer, Chris Cervello from the great class of 1999. We are in the throes of spring here at the Flugel Alumni Center. Things are looking up on the sports side. We'll talk about that. Just had a great, great week, bringing in the Women's SIG, bringing in the Naval Academy Minority Association, if you listened to the pod the week before. And we've got some great things on the horizon, including a little national title game for the Ruggers, a return to that setting, in all honesty. And let's start with that. Chris, welcome back. It's been a bit. Actually, let me stop right there and preview who we have coming on this week. Your friend and mine, Rob Hubert from the great class of 1996. Rob is the father of two Air Force Academy students. They play on the football team, so boo on that. And his youngest son is now committed to go play football at the Coast Guard Academy. So despite the fact that Rob, who's from the class of 96, and his wife Amy, who's from the class of 95, wear blue and gold, they produced kids who are now wearing the colors of other service academies. But Rob's process in parenting them through those decisions, Rob's experience as a naval officer, and now Rob's success in the civilian business community doing skincare and aesthetics is something that everyone's going to want to listen to. Chris, you and I know Rob through a much different setting, and that is through the very best Army-Navy tailgate that exists. Give me your number one memory of the Rob Hubert Irish Car Bomb tailgate.
I would just say, I mean, besides the Irish Car Bombs and, you know, Rob's ability to throw one heck of a party, I mean, Rob is like the guy that you wanted to be buddies with at the Naval Academy. We all know Rob Hubert. We all know that guy that people gravitate towards, whether it's for a tailgater, whether it's for a business function, whether it's just to go out on the weekend. Rob is that guy. He is kind of all the good things that you think of when you think of a Naval Academy alumni and, having your back and being a resource for you. And so I suspect that that's going to come through during your conversation. It's why we wanted to have him on. I'm not surprised that Rob and Amy produced three service academy, sons. Yes, unfortunate, they're not midshipmen, but I mean, they're all three great men in their own right. They're going to be very successful. So, I think this is going to be a good discussion.
Yeah, some context, Rob's role. I first met Rob in 2000 when I first got stationed here in Luce Hall teaching seamanship and navigation. Rob, also a SWO, was teaching there, had been there about a month or two before I got there, and we were thrown the leadership and the management and the ownership of the Surface Warfare Officer Career Information Program, SWOSIP. And we didn't know anything about what we were doing. We were just back from deployments. We were just happy to be on shore duty. And Rob, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, ran with it, made surface warfare extremely popular. And just in the course of 2 years of running that program, SWO went from the least desired and the least requested service assignment to the number one requested service assignment, if you can believe that. Above aviation, above, SEALs. It was an incredible job that he did. And now, as a parent and as a graduate, he throws an incredible tailgate every year marked by an Irish car bomb every bottom of the hour, which, as everyone knows, ends very poorly. Talking about things that ended very well, a great weekend for Naval Academy athletics. Rugby advanced to the national title game for the second straight year. Women's golf, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call this, Chris, the Sing Second anti-jinx, and that we have new head coach Kylie Sullivan on the pod. she comes on, talks about her youthful, you know, perspective, you know, how talented the ladies are, how young they are in the Patriot League season, how young they are as a D1 sport. And all they do is go out and win the Patriot League tournament. So they're going to the NCAAs. And as of today, ladies and gentlemen, Kylie Sullivan was named the Patriot League Coach of the Year. Chris, I don't know what I'm more impressed with. Tennis winning the star, rugby going to the national title game for the second straight year, or women's golf, which is basically a brand spanking new sport, going to the NCAAs, and their coach, who is basically young enough to be our daughter, just won Patriot League Coach of the Year.
Well, you know, John, I think it's women's golf. You know, we were able to mentor Kylie off air. She said, "John and Chris, I like to tell the girls to lay up. What do you think about that?" And we said, "Kylie, absolutely not. You never lay up. You make these girls pull driver and go for it every time. Hit driver off the deck. All those things that you shouldn't do, we think you should do it. These girls are midshipmen." And obviously our advice paid off, John.
We have done nothing but produce a bunch of Nelly Cordas for the women's golf team. So all they do is win now, which is a pretty special thing. And all joking aside, couldn't be happier for Kylie. She's sitting here planning for her wedding in Colorado here, and probably, it's about a month and a half away. And she just won the Patriot League tournament and the Patriot League Coach of the Year. So congrats to her. Also happening this week, other than sports, really busy week around here. We celebrated the Women's SIG annual meeting. That took place on Saturday here at the Flugel Alumni Center. Always good seeing Postie, Megan Gandy, the rest of the Women's SIG leadership. They had a great round of speakers come in and talk about the importance of Women's SIG. And just putting it out there, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming up, in 2026 on the beginning of 50 years of women at the Naval Academy. They first showed up in 1976, first class graduated in 1980. The Women's SIG is playing a huge role in planning, budgeting, and making 50 years of women at the Naval Academy a special thing, and that's deserved. We also had the Naval Academy Minority Association here this past week for the leadership conference, their annual leadership conference. Speakers included Admiral Michelle Howard, Maryland Lieutenant Governor Aruna Miller, and many, many others. Jeff Webb was able to address that that group as well. So a great, great time here. And you're sensing something here, right? Through Women's SIG, through NAMA, Chris, and through what everyone's going to hear from Rob Hubert here in a second. I know that it's convenient, and I know that our next capital campaign for the foundation is focused on leadership, but it's really these different leadership lessons, Chris, that we hear from all these interviews, from all of these, different sources that make this pod special.
Yeah, John, I think you're right. I mean, I very much remember, from being a young 18-year-old all the way through my naval career, everybody talked about it. You can learn the goods and the bads from leadership. And I think we've tried very hard to bring guests on that, are humble and share where they've done right. And we brought some guests on who have shared where they've done wrong and how they've tried to learn. And so that's really the point of these conversations. We try to make them fun. We try to joke a little bit. We want to keep it light. But at the end of the day, it's sharing what's really good about being a Naval Academy graduate and being part of the larger Naval Academy community.
Well, here's a fun conversation coming up. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here's a great conversation with Class of 1996 legend, Rob Hubert. Rob Hubert from the Class of 96, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and just give the listening audience a little, once over. What company were you in? What'd you do as a midshipman? And then from there, what did you do after the Naval Academy?
Well, it's a blessing to be here, grateful to be here, John. And at the end of the day, friendship is always the key to success in life. And ultimately, 33rd, that was the company, right?
Yeah, we don't even have 33 companies anymore.
I've heard that, and it's a rumor. I don't think that's true, but I'm not.
There are only 30, although this coming year, newsflash from everyone, we're going from 30 companies to 36.
So back to the way it used to be.
Back to the way it used to be.
Yeah, that's the way.
I mean, you're bringing the fundamentals back.
I love it. So yeah, 33rd Thundering Herd, and then Second Company, and I am here this weekend to do the podcast. Of course, that's a priority, and then secondary to that is the promotion of Vincent Chucky-Yao, class of '96, to Admiral. Super excited.
So introduce us a little bit to your classmate and to the, like, what makes your class special. We don't do enough of this on the pod to talk about classes and bonds. I mean, you're flying in from Atlanta for the promotion of your roommate, which speaks a lot to the bonds that are formed here on the banks of the Severn. You know, I'm close with my Villanova roommates and classmates, but I've always thought that it's almost a bit more carnal and legitimate on Naval Academy levels, because you go through so much more with your roommates. Introduce us to the future Admiral and why you decided to come home for this.
It's a great question. And, you know, I think the fraternity here at the Naval Academy is still strong. I hope it's still strong. It was strong, very, very strong back in 96. And this is a group of folks who, many of which have not seen each other since we graduated in 96, which is kind of cool, right? So, yeah, there's a lot of trials and tribulations, and we are very excited that Vince is getting promoted tomorrow to Admiral. He's the first of our company. I think he's one of a handful that have been promoted to Admiral in the class of 96.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it is a fraternity. It's a very tight-knit fraternity. And even though many of us have not talked for 10, 15, 20, 20-plus years, we're all getting together tonight to celebrate Vince's promotion, which is kind of cool.
So another cool thing about your past, Rob, and so you came through the Naval Academy, you become a surface warfare officer, you go out and do your thing, you know, one of those tours on USS Tortuga, and then you come back and you teach at the Naval Academy in the Department of Seamanship and Navigation. That's when you and I first met. You know, the real interesting thing about your backstory, in addition to that, you know, coming back to our shipmate issue this month that talks about dual graduate couples, you know, you're married to an alumnus. Your wife, Amy, is from the great class of 1995. Talk a little bit about how challenging that dynamic was and now where you're at as a family and how successful Amy is, how your service careers, you know, and sometimes took you together, but oftentimes took you apart. I mean, that's a challenge, right?
That's a great question. So yes, I did marry up for sure. It's the one smart decision I made in my life. And I did marry a class of 96.
Minus one.
Yeah. Amy Solness, which those of you who were grads would remember her as, now Amy Hubert. We've been married for 24 years, and I'm fortunate we did not meet at the Naval Academy. Because a lot of Naval Academy graduates, at least on the male side of the house, were a little bit socially retarded for a lot of reasons.
Shocking.
Yeah, right. But net, we met January 24th, 1997. On USS Tortuga, and I know you're a Pearl Harbor guy, so
we all love the LSD 52 class.
My Gator Navy, baby, that's the way to go. But yeah, we've been married 24 years now, and she is definitely somebody who has excelled, largely because of the person that she is, and the person that she is the reason why she got to the Naval Academy. And what was the question that you wanted me to answer?
Like how special the bond is, right? Like it's you both went through a crucible while you're here. I know there are a lot of examples out there of graduates marrying graduates and then having kids who become graduates. I mean, this isn't an uncommon story, but each story of graduate couples has a nuance within it. You know, yours, Amy was a SWO, became a doctor. Now she runs an incredibly successful practice down in Atlanta, and it took you guys supporting each other through thick and thin. You know, when you were on active duty, when Amy was in Afghanistan, you guys had to deal with, I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, a lot of shit, you know, like, so how did you get through that other than the basic things that you learned in pre-Cana or whatever marriage class you go through about communication and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a challenge.
At the end of the day, that which does not kill you makes you stronger, right? So when you think about the trials and tribulations of what we've had, so we got married and ultimately we both had our careers. And Amy is somebody who always perseveres in her role, and she graduated from the Naval Academy class of 96 minus one. Yep. And yep. She was told when she graduated that she wasn't smart enough to be a physician, which is kind of funny because you never tell my wife anything she can't do, because that's just motivation for her. And so ultimately she did end up going to medical school, but she had to go surface warfare first. And back in the day, and you know this better than anybody, I'm like, surface warfare was not all that in a bag of chips back in the class of 96 minus one. And ultimately she went SWO. She got her SWO pin in 5.5, 6 months, which is a little bit fast for the time. And then she went to medical school and she graduated top of her class and she was AOA and all that and stuff. And everything she has done in her career has reeked of success. And I feel fortunate because that's the one smart decision I made, was marrying up. And I married her.
Well, so now the other interesting family angle to the Hubert family, ladies and gentlemen, is that not only are you guys, you know, dual graduate, you know, you're a dual graduate couple, but you also have kids now who serve at service academies. Your older two kids playing football at the Air Force Academy, and now your youngest just accepting an appointment to the Coast Guard Academy. How does this feel coming full circle? You know, having been a family of fundamental service, Amy's sisters, you know, went to the Naval Academy. You know, service to your country has been very relevant in your family as well. And now your kids are following in the footsteps. What does that mean to you? I know that you didn't press that upon them, you know, as what they were expected to do, but they still did it. You know, so obviously you and Amy imparted some sort of wisdom upon them that made them embark upon this life. What do you think that wisdom actually was?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the wisdom part of it, but the experience part of it, I can definitely speak to. And at the end of the day, all those kids, our three boys, and I know you have three boys too, like our three boys, they went to the Army-Navy game every year because it was kind of tradition, right? So they did get exposed to that.
I would throw them very, very pinpoint skinny posts out there in the parking lot of Jet Row, you know, after maybe 4, 5, or 12 Irish car bombs, but they were still pinpoint skinny posts, ladies and gentlemen. But they got to experience like the, you know, the collegial nature of the Army-Navy game, but still there was a lot more foundation that you and Amy provided them.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's important as you go through this craziness called life that you go out of your way to make other people look good. I really believe that that's the reason why we're all here. It's not because of ourselves and our self-service. It's really because of why we were here, and everybody's put here for a different reason. But at the end of the day, they all got exposed to the military, and part of it was Army-Navy, part of it was just, you know, Amy's service. I mean, she did 22 years combined, active and reserves. And, you know, I only did 7 active and then a couple years reserves, but they lived the situation. You know, Amy deployed in 2010. She went to Afghanistan. She was in the Helmand province. She was at Camp Bastion. And she signed 250 death certificates that year. I mean, that's a kind of a big thing. And the kids, they were exposed to that. We didn't hide anything from them. And they understood that mom was gone and what she was doing. And then again, she was recalled to active duty when she was trying to retire. And she got deployed to Djibouti, which is the capital.
Scenic Djibouti.
Oh, yeah.
No better place on the planet other than maybe Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
True story. But yeah, so they have grown up in a traditional military family where one of the parents is gone to serve their country. So I hope they appreciated that, but they've also grown up in that environment where, you know, they've been told their whole life that it's not
It's not about them. It's about the greater good, whatever that may be. And you know, I'm hopeful that with them going to the other service academies, that they're choosing a lifestyle where they will be going out of their way to help others. Like, that's what it's all about, man. And I am, although I'm very saddened to a small degree, they didn't go to the Naval Academy. I'm very excited for them that they are at a service academy.
So help me out there, because we've talked to a lot of Naval Academy parents about, you know, what it's like being a service academy parent. And now you are not only a service academy graduate, but you're a service academy parent, but at a different service academy. And so with all due respect, and I'm not asking you to take sides here, but what are the differences that you've noticed so far between, you know, Navy and Colorado Springs? You know, that Air Force, obviously, without as much history, about 200 years or 100 years less of history. How do you evaluate it?
It's a great question, John. And, you know, you and I have talked about this a couple different times in different ways. And at the end of the day, I wanted my kids to go here. It's my alma mater. It's Amy's alma mater. And they chose not to go here. But they were recruited to play football, our two oldest boys. And they chose the Air Force Academy. And I know they chose it for the right reasons. It wasn't about the football. It was about service to country, service to humanity, et cetera. And, you know, my brother has a daughter who's at West Point, and her brother is probably going to be going to Air Force here. We'll find out.
Oh, boy.
I know. It's a crazy thing. Nobody's going to Navy. But at the end of the day, you know, you want your kids to be happy. You really do. And you want them to make their own choices and be their own people. And I think that's part of it. You know, all three of our boys went to literally every Army Navy game since, you know, they were born.
Since they were alive.
They went to every single one. So they were definitely exposed to the military. They understood what it meant. And the two oldest chose Air Force. And the reasons why is I think part of it is the service, right? Like that's something that was imbued upon them. Part of it was, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, just to be very candid, they did a better job. They did a better job than Navy did in recruiting for football. And then lastly, for our youngest, like he was recruited by Coast Guard Academy and was told as a freshman he would be a starter. And there's not a lot of places you can start as a freshman.
Well, a very wise man named Matt Munley once told me that you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. So you can't be unhappy that your kids are happy at another place. You know, we all have designs on our kids following in our footsteps, almost literally. But in this particular case, you know, all three of the Huber boys who I've known since they were, you know, pre-born, you know, to see them serving, you know, just warms my heart. I want to change directions a little bit, Rob, because a lot of their success, you know, was born out of the teachings that you and Amy gave them, but they don't really have a whole lot of memories of you in uniform, certainly. I mean, they were like babies when you got out of uniform, and maybe they remember a little bit more of Amy's time in uniform, but you in particular went from wearing the uniform to being very successful in a, you know, at the time, a burgeoning industry, and now a mainstream multi-billion-dollar industry, which is the skincare, Botox, Allergan related industry. You know, when we talked to you when this was the Sing Second Sports podcast, you expounded upon that a little bit. But tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you did after you got out of the Navy, and now how that is providing you and Amy the livelihood that you enjoy today.
So it's a great question. And at the end of the day, everything happens for a reason. And then, you know, ultimately timing's everything. So when I got off active duty, and believe me, I didn't want to get off active duty. I had desires and dreams to be an admiral and command a ship. And, you know, I thought that was the place for me. But then I got married and, you know, things change. And ultimately for Amy and I, she was going to Japan and they wouldn't co-locate us there. So I got out. And my dad was the one who told me, it's like, hey, you'd be great at sales. I'm like, hey, Pop, so I, you know, thank you. I love you. I appreciate your support. But at the end of the day, I've been a surface warfare officer. I've been a combat systems officer. I've been the electrical officer. Like, I have never been in sales. He said, no, you'd be great at it. So when I got out, as a function of just Amy getting relocated to Jacksonville, Florida, and they didn't co-locate us, I chose to get out. And I chose Allergan not because of anything other than the fact that they were the only company that would give me a shot. They were the only ones. Like, they wouldn't, nobody else would entertain a military guy that has no sales experience. So Allergan took a chance on me, and I'll give credit to Jim Hartman and Bill Humphreys. It's a long time ago, but they took a risk on me. And, you know, at the time I was in the Navy, I was working with Marines, Navy divers, you know, on an amphib ship, much like you, John, right? And then I was teaching celestial navigation, the surface warfare compendium course at the Naval Academy. And so to transition to sales, like, that's a big leap of faith. Yeah. And not a lot of people believed in me, but my dad did, and two folks at Allergan did, apparently. And so I went from working in a surface warfare community to selling beauty products. And that was 2003, a long time ago.
Well, to your credit, though, and we'll come back and pull the thread on our time at CNAV together, but you should be singularly, and I don't use this term loosely, but you should be singularly applauded for almost totally changing the paradigm in the face of surface warfare at the Naval Academy. So, ladies and gentlemen, when Rob and I are with, you know, we'll shout them out right now, Brad Snodgrass, Andy Quorm, Eric Thiel, John of Vavasor, you know, like a group of absolute superstars. You want to talk about awesome wardroom, ladies and gentlemen, like what we had at the Department of Seamanship and Navigation at the Naval Academy from 2000 to 2003 was special. But Rob, you know, you were a junior lieutenant, you know, tasked with all sorts of things. We're teaching four sections of class. We're doing three, you know, blocks of summer YPs, and let's not go into those stories. But, you know, on top of that, you were then asked to sell the surface warfare community to the classes of 2003, 2004, 2005, the Surface Warfare Officer Career Information Program, SWOSIP for short. You had already sold something that was hard to sell, you know, like, and we came up with various things to get people to understand that SWO is cool. We came up with SWO doesn't suck, you suck. You know, Keelan Regan, shout out to our boy for making the t-shirt. Yeah, we decided to do keggers at the Robert Crown Sailing Center or down in Smoke Hall. But I think the sales thing was resident in you. Did you feel that, or were you just freestyling that? Because I know I was.
I still feel like I am freestyling.
Yeah.
So those were great times, and those were great days. And to give full credit, like, I give you all the credit for the resurgence of surface warfare at the Naval Academy.
Well, and those were you were the leader of the
program. Well, hey, look, I inherited it, right?
From Rick Villarreal. Villarreal,
right?
Pour one out for his ACL during a racquetball game. No big deal.
That's true. I wasn't gonna bring that up. That is a fair statement. But yeah, you know, I didn't feel like it was salesmanship as much as it was just being honest and true, like being candid, and to your point, like, SWO doesn't suck. I mean, SWO never sucked. It was the people. And then it's always about the people, right? Because it doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, whether it's in the military or it's in a civilian role. At the end of the day, you know, you have to surround yourself with people. Like, you have to have the support structure to be that. And so I felt when I was at the Naval, and look, you know, I was the guy who never wanted to go SWO.
Yeah.
I wanted to be an aviator. Then I wanted to be a spec war guy. They want to be a Marine, of all things, right? My ass rides the Navy equipment. And I was told I couldn't do those things, right? Because of, you know, some NPQ stuff. And so I had to, quote unquote, go SWO. It was the best thing that ever happened. And then obviously when going back to the academy as an instructor and having the fortunate benefit of being in charge of the CIP thing and being in charge of a course curriculum and having a support cast, you know, and you are the biggest part of that support cast. Like, you were able to change the perception of what I would say is the most important warfare class in the United States Navy.
So, well, you made it and we're about to embark on a campaign at the Alumni Association and Foundation, you know, that raises money for the next generation of support for the Naval Academy. And so much of this is behind the idea of the Naval Academy being the premier leadership institute in the country, probably on the planet, that, you know, you can go somewhere and here are the top schools for political science, and here are the top schools for liberal arts, or the top schools for pre-med. But if you want to be a leader, the Naval Academy is the Harvard Kennedy School of Leadership, ladies and gentlemen. And I remember distinctly, Rob, you being almost prescient with your, you know, with your understanding of the importance of surface warfare and how we could make it relatable to the current midshipman. You said, this is immediate leadership. You know, if you're an aviator, you're going to wait years. You're going to like wait for 18 months to start primary. And by the time you get your wings, you're a lieutenant JG. You're not leading a human being until you're a lieutenant or a lieutenant commander. Whereas surface warfare officers, well, you know, submariners, you have to go to prototype and, you know, all the other schools. But surface warfare officers, within 6 months of being commissioner, standing in front of a group of people and they're leading. You know, and you came up with that idea of how can you immediately practice the art that you've learned here? And it was remarkable. You know, spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, when Rob and I and the rest of those aforementioned lieutenants were at Luce Hall and Seamanship and Navigation, the numbers for surface warfare, interest and service assignment went up dramatically. And it was all due to Rob. Now, you transition to you getting out of the Navy and leading teams of people at Allergan in beauty sales and skincare. And you use basically the same leadership tenets that you used back then. You know, you inspired a group of people to sell a product that then put Allergan on the map as a $1 billion company. How much of your leadership lessons from a midshipman and as a lieutenant did you apply when you were at Allergan?
Yeah, so a couple things. Number one, I don't want you to give me too much credit because at the end of the day...
Oh, bullshit.
At the end of the day, I'm just the guy that was there because, you know, you are as much, if not more, part of changing the paradigm shift at surface warfare. And then the civilian transition, like, that was an easy transition for me only because you learn a lot when you're thrown into a crucible of leadership, right? So when you have to lead, you either thrive or you die. And I'm very fortunate to have had tons of mentorship in my life and my career and being around people that I could emulate. And so over the years, so the question specifically was the, you know, transitioning from the military to the civilian thing. Like, when you look at leaders, I think there really is a recipe for great leadership. And I've kind of bucketed it in this leadership hat. It's a little bit corny to a degree, but I can only remember like three things and I have to have an acronym to remember stuff because I'm old now. But the leadership hat is HAT, right? Humility, accountability, and trust. And as you go through life, you quickly realize that you want to surround yourself with people who are humble, who are accountable, and who are trustworthy. They don't have to be the smartest people in the room. I mean, that helps, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But if they're humble enough to recognize the fact that they don't know everything, that's a real big win. If they're accountable enough to take ownership of situations that, you know, they screwed up or other people screwed up, I mean, that's a win. And the trust part, I mean, you know better than anybody, John. Like, if you don't trust people, you're never gonna work with them. So, you know, I've kind of embraced that over the years, that leadership hat thing, and it's kind of been my mantra. Like, I don't want to work with anybody that doesn't want to wear a leadership hat, that doesn't want to be you know, the guy or gal who wakes up in the morning and understands and realizes that, hey, everybody puts their shoes on the same way, right? You know, that's the humility part.
Well, what you're doing there is you're generating buy-in, you know, through humility, through, you know, being trustworthy, and then showing people that they are held accountable and that you yourself are accountable. You are generating buy-in. I'm going to ask you to brag on yourself with a very quick answer. You know, so you eventually go from teaching celestial navigation and surface warfare officer practicum course to working for Allergan as a very base level, you know, salesperson. And let's fast forward 15, 17, 20 years, and you are essentially the EVP for sales and marketing for Allergan. What was your biggest sales year? You know, just to give graduates out there an understanding of the command of the battle space that you had, what was Allergan sales for your best year?
So to be clear, I was just the president, VP, the vice president of sales. And you don't get there without having a great supporting cast. So, after 20 years, and with a lot of luck and a lot of help, you know, I did get to that position. And at the pinnacle, it was $2 billion. It's kind of crazy.
$1 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. And to think about it, like, monetarily,
it's,
like,
it's incredible.
It's a lot of money.
Yes.
But I never thought of it that way. It was always about the people. I mean, that was what I always thought about.
Well, so you dig into the mission statement here, and we're inspiring the graduates of this institution to aspire to the highest levels of command, citizenship, and government. And you know, this isn't necessarily government. You know, we can dig into this mission statement all day long, but your citizenship, you know, while in the beauty and skincare industry, is still a $1 billion industry. You got there with leadership, with humility, you know, and made that so successful. And now, you know, you and your wife are running her own practice, a practice that's doing so well. And we, you know, as we love to do on this podcast and the Alumni Association and Foundation, highlight alumni-owned businesses. Explain a little bit about now how you've transitioned that corporate knowledge, that leadership, Amy's experience as a doctor, as a medical professional, to what business you're running today.
Yeah, so, you know, Amy is class of 96 minus one. We've already covered that, right? And she graduated from the academy and really wanted to go into medicine. And my wife's the type of person that you don't ever tell she's not good enough or can't do something, because that just motivates her. But during the process at the Naval Academy, you have to go to an interview to be a physician. And they don't choose a lot of physicians out of the Naval Academy. I think it was 13 in the class of 95.
Yeah, it's usually in the low teens.
Yeah, it's a small amount. And she went through that process. And to her credit and to her, you know, success, she wasn't a 4.0 student. She wasn't the greatest chemistry major, which she was told she had to do if she wanted to be a physician.
She was also a phenomenal athlete, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. And her sisters are phenomenal athletes, so let's just leave it on the table.
That is true. She was recruited to swim. And, you know, so she was a chemistry major, and she did okay. And then she had to go through the interview process, and she was told that can I be candid? Like, I'll be candid. Like,
yeah, the old academic dean.
The old dean. Told her in the interview process that, you know, not everybody is smart enough to be a physician, which is the last thing you ever want to tell my wife. So,
or anyone who has a dream.
Well, and for her, though, perseverance is like at the crucible of her. Like, that is, she will always persevere. So she went swell, which you and I both agree is the best warfare place to go.
Easily.
Back then, it maybe was a little bit frowned upon, but she went SWO, and you know, the SWO pin, as you know, is like a 1-year to 2-year process. She did it in 5.5 months, and then she selected to lateral transfer into medicine. Got picked up, went to medical school, graduated AOA, top of her class, and it's been all downhill from there. I mean, she has killed it.
So the practice now, how many employees? Yeah, so she has taken now her Navy medicine experience, your experience in the Allergan industry, and you guys are running an extremely successful practice down in Georgia. You know, how many employees, you know, how is it going?
Yeah, so we started off 2 years ago with nobody. It was just her and her one of her close friends, Julie Thor, right? And they weren't doing it for a business. They were doing it to treat themselves and close friends. And that has now accelerated 2 years later to a very successful business where they have 17 plus and, you know, full-time employees. They have five providers that are treating patients. And when you look at the landscape of aesthetic practices, there's well over 50,000 accounts in the United States that are doing Botox and Juvederm and the variety of minimally invasive aesthetics. And they, Amy and her practice, they're in the top 250. And that's to her credit. It has nothing to do with me. That's her. That's all her. And that's something that is unheard of in the space to do what she has done. And I'm very proud of her.
And this is an industry, if I may contextualize it, because a lot of people snicker when it comes to like the word Botox. But you made me a believer in skincare at a very young age. I'll never forget, the main provider at our prime sponsor, ProMD Health Annapolis, shout out to Scott Melamed and Dr. George Gavrilla. But Dr. Gravilla, you know, was looking at my face one day and you know, beyond the compliments about how gorgeous I am, he was like, hey, man, like, number one, you need to tint your windows. You've got a lot of sun, you know, damage on your face. And, you know, a lot of this is not cosmetic so that you look like you can star in a movie. It's stuff that actually helps the health of your skin. And that's a challenge in this day and age to contextualize, you know, what beauty care and skin care is, you know, that it's not about, you know, looking great on an Instagram photo. For me, the value of ProMD Health and the same practice that you and your wife run now is for your longevity, for your general, you know, overall health, right?
If you think about mental health, which I believe is the most important, right? So how you feel about yourself is very important. And it doesn't mean you need to be, you know, the movie star quality person, whatever that means. But the tagline that Amy created for the Beauty Barn is everybody comes beautiful. They always come beautiful. But then they leave glowing. And, you know, Maya Angelou has that saying, right? It's not about how people, you know, what people say, what people do. It's how people feel, like how they feel in the situation. And I think that is what my wife and all successful practices in the space kind of harnesses. It's not about the look as much as it is about how they feel. And that is key, whether, you know, you're a sexy guy. I mean, I'm not going to lie, you look great. But at the end of the day, if you don't feel great, you know, it's different. And so if you're able to go to a provider that can help you feel a little bit more confident, or a little bit more secure, or a little bit better about who you are as a person, that's what matters. It's not vanity. It's not Hollywood. It's not, and Hollywood has done this industry no favors because they are batshit crazy, for lack of a better word.
Understatement.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, we're running out of time, but there is a particular vignette that I want to jump into. You know, and it's serious, you know, because this pod is all about the hard issues and the important vignettes. But you know, for me, you know, all joking aside, we had the opportunity to host you when you were working at Allergan, and I was the public affairs officer on USS George H.W. Bush. You and your sales staff had the honor of being our first ever, that ship's first ever distinguished visitor embark. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know carrier operations, you know, on top of like, you know, putting warheads on foreheads and launching airplanes and basically being the most unbelievable piece of power projection that our Navy has, the U.S. Navy aircraft carrier also is, you know, one of the biggest tourist grounds that we have. We, as PAOs, host distinguished visitors usually somewhere between 10 and 12, about four times a week when you're underway. people from C-suites, people from, different navies, leaders from around the world. And so when we were just building the USS George H.W. Bush Distinguished Visitor Program, we had to practice. We had to get ready, because our second Distinguished Visitor group, this is back in 2010, ladies and gentlemen, was Rahm Emanuel and the newly established White House leadership group. Rahm Emanuel, the speech writer, the director of communications, the director of social media. We had like the Obama White House coming out to the aircraft carrier, and we were asked to find a group to kind of test drive our Distinguished Visitor Program on, and we were able to test drive it on you. Like, what was that experience like? Because you and I have tons of stories, but I love to hear how that affected, how the exposure to the Navy affected your salespeople and gave them context and perspective about what's important in life.
Yeah, so to be very transparent and honest, like Bob Rattigan was our leader of the company at that point in time. There's this misconception about the military. You only know about the military if you watch the news or you've been there. And a lot of folks have never been there. You know better than anybody. Like, what's the statistics? Like, it's less than
Less than 1%.
there you go. Less than 1% of America actually experiences what the military is. So that moment in my career was probably the best moment because it afforded me the opportunity through you and what you allowed us to do to expose a group of civilians to what it's really about, to what really happens at the tip of the spear, right? Because you watch CNN or Fox News, whatever your political, it doesn't matter. Like, you're fed to a degree a line of bullshit, right? And it's not always the truth. And I will tell you, the group of people that we were able to bring out there that day, none of them have been exposed to the military. None of them have had ever served. Many of them actually were anti-military. And it was because of that DV tour, and I will tell you, Sherry Lazier, and I'll mention her name. She told me flat out afterwards she didn't understand and never knew what it was like to be at the tip of the spear. And it was educational. It was so educational. Brad Holbrook, a guy who is
Sweated right through that
crying.
cashmere sweater,
He
my man.
did. He did. But again, somebody who still to this day, years later, speaks as he's like, that was the pinnacle. So I think back on that, John, and I will tell you, like, that was like the pinnacle of my career to be able to channel that. And I didn't do shit. I just called you, and you made everything else happen, right? It's one of the reasons why I feel the Army Navy game is not just a game. Like, it is an educational experience, especially for somebody who's never been. Same thing with what you did with the DV tour with the Bush. Like, to get people exposed to the real grassroots of what the military is all about, it's important. Because you don't know unless you've been there. You have no idea unless you've served, and less than 1% of the population serves. So exposing folks to what really happens on the tip of the spear, I think, is uber important. Whether it's the DV tours on the Bush, lights out, or like the Army Navy game. Like, who's going to go to an Army Navy game? If you're not from Army or Navy and you know nothing about the game, you're like, oh, well, that's high school football. Why the hell would you go to that? And how many people have said that to you over the
Yeah,
years?
I mean, it just in one of our last two episodes, one of our newest distinguished graduates, Jerry Miller, talked about how it was watching the Army Navy game that originated his interest in attending the Naval Academy, and all he's done now is become a distinguished grad. So, let's put a pin in it, Rob, because this conversation has been amazing, and I don't want to talk about too many other things that are going to possibly get us indicted for things, retroactively. But for me, it always comes back to, and you've talked about it, and you literally just ended your last sentence about talking about service and talking about the importance of the Naval Academy. Now, at your perspective, you're 50 years old. You have served not only in uniform, but, you know, in really, really high level positions in a $1 billion enterprise, a $1 billion industry. You are the father of about to be three Service Academy students, and you're the husband of a fellow Service Academy graduate. What is it about the Naval Academy? Like, if you had, you know, 30 seconds in an elevator to convince someone about what the Naval Academy has meant to you. You know, I talk about it a lot with my friends. You know, this is why Villanova made me who I was. This is why getting kicked out of West Point made me who I was. I know the Naval Academy for you as something special and personal. What is that?
Yeah, so 30 seconds or less, which is
not possible. We're not going to do that, ladies and gentlemen.
Finite amount of time. You know, I think the biggest thing, honestly, is not about what you learn about whatever, academics or the military, whatever. It's truly what you learn about yourself. Because you're thrown into this space. And I don't care how many people say they, oh yeah, I prepped you for whatever. Like, it's, you're still unknown. And you wake up and you're like, holy shit, I'm a plebe at the United States Naval Academy. And you quickly realize that in order to survive, quote unquote, like, you have to learn your limitations. And then you have to learn the fact that to survive, you can't do it on your own. Like, you have to have other people. For me personally, like, that was the biggest lesson in life. Like, I thought it was all that in a bag of chips getting out of high school, you know, top of the class. I was an athlete. I wasn't the best athlete, but, you know, and then you come here and you're humbled. And then you quickly realize, like, if I want to succeed in life, I got to recognize my own limitations. And then I have to surround myself with people who can fill that void, because, you know, at the end of the day, it takes a team. And I think that's the biggest lesson learned I had out of the academy.
Rob, such a joy being in your company. Such a joy having you on this podcast. Many thanks to you, your wife, Amy, for what you've done to support your alma mater and raise three great kids. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to break. When we come back, Chris Cervallo and I are going to bring this out. This has been the 60-Second Pod. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Let's take this out. It was a long conversation with Rob, and we had a lot to talk about at the front end. Let's go back from here. Chris, exciting pod coming up next week. We're going to talk to Lieutenant Nico West, former captain of the Naval Academy soccer team. He is now an active duty PAO working for NPACE, which is a public affairs support element in Norfolk, Virginia. But he is doing the public affairs, ladies and gentlemen, for the bridge response in Baltimore, the Baltimore Key Bridge response, the efforts to get all of the wreckage out of there, the Army Corps of Engineers. But Navy Public Affairs is first and foremost out there doing its thing. Nico West is going to give us some of his perspective on that. I know that you had on the Cava Ships podcast a couple of guests to talk about the impact here. Give us a little bit about what you're hearing. We've had a lot of stuff happening, not only in big Navy, through the budget, through the back and forth about the Virginia class submarine, with the Constellation class frigate, and everything else there, but, you know, also, you know, with our relevance in terms of helping shipping taking place in, you know, in Baltimore, in and around the Key Bridge. Tell us a little bit about what you've been talking about on the Cava Ships podcast and what you're hearing in big Navy about the issues that are kind of hurting the head of the E-ring.
Well, John, it's should be no surprise to anyone that listens to this podcast that really now more than ever, our Navy and Marine Corps is in high demand. You know, we continue to work hard to get young men and women to join those services. Unfortunately, the Navy this year will be several thousand sailors short of their target. So that's a message that if you know a young man or woman that's interested in being a sailor, do your part to help recruit them. But in addition to the men and women being in demand, the platforms that these men and women crew all around the world are in high demand. And so that's the focus of the budget. Secretary Carlos del Toro and the uniform leadership is working very hard to make the trade-offs between fixing the stuff we have and buying new stuff. And then add on top of it, in addition to the Navy and Marine Corps being in high demand, our goods and services, both in and out of the United States, are in high demand. And so when one of the largest ports on the East Coast suffers the catastrophe that Baltimore did, it ripples across the world. Add to the fact that there's a hot war going on in the Red Sea that involves shipping, it has really made the shipping situation tenuous. So all of that, we're juggling all that on the Cavis Ships podcast as a way of keeping our listeners informed, so that they understand the big issues that Navy leadership, Marine Corps leadership are juggling day in and day out.
Yeah, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be in the know, in and around, you know, the maritime stories and news, definitely listen to Cavis Ships, the Defense and Aerospace Report. It's just great intel. You know, in addition to being very impressed by Chris Cervello's acumen, as we go out, I definitely want to make one last homage to Admiral Leighton Snuffy Smith. His funeral was this past Friday. We also had a remembrance meal for Captain Miguel Nava, who most of you know, earlier this spring lost his life tragically in a 53 helicopter crash out in San Diego. Again, a great part of what we do as an alumni association and foundation is properly remember, you know, all of our alums, all of our, you know, Naval Academy family who have gone on through the amazing sacrifice and selfless service. So again, pour one out for Admiral Leighton Snuffy Smith and Miguel Nava. It meant so much for us to be able to say goodbye to them this past week. We have a lot coming up this coming week. Welcome back to the Naval Academy, the Council of Class Presidents. And after that, in early May, we have the 30th anniversary of the Service Academy Career Conference, SAC, and the Board of Trustees meeting here for the Alumni Association. We're going to have a full interview with Chairman of the Board of Trustees, retired Admiral Mark Ferguson from the Class of 78, along with Jeff Webb and TJ Grady. And for SAC, we're going to bring in the OG of SAC. If you guys ever heard the name Dave Church at the Naval Academy, ladies and gentlemen, it's for good reason, because he is everywhere. And he was basically the originator of the Naval Academy's presence at the Service Academy Career Conference. We have those interviews, along with an exit interview with Pat Owen, the retiring director of Navy Golf. So we have a lot of great stuff coming your way before we sign off for the season during commissioning week. Chris Cervello, thank you so much for what you do. Thank you to Rob Hubert for coming on. Thank you to you, the fans, and our sponsors, Scott Melamed of ProMD Health, Scott Shooter of Shrek Realty Crew, and Scott Sloan of Stratus Corps. We'll see you next week. This is Sing Second. We are out.